This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
That theme song you've been hiding under a rock. It's the theme song from one of my all-time favorite TV shows, It's a Different World. Shout out to my girl, my Detroit sister, Aretha Franklin. A Different World is an American sitcom and spinoff of another one of my favorite shows, The Cosby Show, that aired for six seasons on NBC from September 24th, 1997 to July 9th, 1993. The series originally centered on Denise Huxtable, that was everybody's crush back in the day, a.k.a. Lisa Bonet, and the life of students at Hillman College, a fictional historically black college. Shout out to all the HBCUs, historically black college in Virginia. It was inspired by student life at historically black colleges and universities. I'm so excited that one of the former cast members of A Different World has joined me in the bomb shelter to talk about the show and her upcoming project. Who am I talking about? Sharnell Brown. Who is Sharnell Brown? She is in the building. She is in the building. All the way from East Hampton, New York City.
What's up,
Sister Sharnell? Welcome to the Brown Shelter.
Thank you
for taking your time out of your busy schedule. You got amazing accolades. Of course, you went to State University of New York at New Paltz, where you studied acting with some amazing people. You starred in one of my favorite Broadway musicals about apartheid in South Africa, which starred Serafina, one of my favorite shows. But we all know you, homegirl, as Kimberly Reese on NBC's A Different World, who was one of the most relatable characters during the radio show. Striving for educational perfection. And I must say, you added a whole bunch of chocolate to that light-skinned it. And I got degrees. I can say light-skinned it, folks, on that show. We are so happy that you are joining us in the Sound Bombing Studios. And we know that you're currently living in Houston, and you created a company called TriWin, a production company created with singing sensation Andre. Is it Petre?
Petrie.
Oh, Petrie. Okay, I jacked the brother's name up. So hearing that song, I know that's the, I think there were three songs in the season.
Yeah, three of them, exactly.
And I think Aretha Franklin brought it down.
But Phoebe Snow was nice too, though. Phoebe had that nice vibe.
Was that the first one?
The Bohemian vibe. The first one was Phoebe Snow.
That was a little laid back.
But I think that,
and there were three songs for those that are trying to check our trivia out there. I love number two. When you hear that song, Sharnell, what feelings or what arises in you though?
You know, it takes me to a great place. It takes me to a good place in my life. You know, that back then when, actors were really actors and, we were really supportive of one another and, that's what we're taught. I mean, back in the day, while acting, we're all a family, and you come together, and you work together, and you love together, and that's it. So, you don't have it as much anymore today. It's coming back, but it's not as much. And so it's nice to see and to hear. When I hear that song, it just feels good. It's like a family, and we protected each other, supported each other.
Well, I agree with that. And let me just admit, in 1987, I was still in high school, homegirl. When I was in college at Grambling State University in Louisiana, we would rush home to watch this TV show because, we were excited about the characters. But I must admit, I would rush home because every now and then you will see a Morehouse jersey. You will see a Grambling State University.
You will see them
sliding in some AKAs,
right.
Some Delta Sigma Thetas. They were shot out a lot of these different organizations and colleges. Mm-hmm. So that really got me excited. But before we jump into a different world, I want to ask you, when did you first fall in love with acting?
Second grade. And then, second grade. I always tell people, God always gives you your desire when you're born.
Yes.
And you just have to find out what your desire is and then work at it. And he'll come halfway with you, but you got to find a desire. And I always tell people something that you'll do for free. Because the money will follow. Something you'll do for free is your desire. Something that you love that much that you know that God will make a way and you're doing what you love.
So what role did you have in second grade? Were you a tree?
In second grade, what I did was I went beyond a tree. What I did was I'm dating myself. But back then, Lassie was the show to watch. He was this collie dog, he would save the day. And one day he didn't come back the time allotted for the time that was going off. And I thought that the darn dog had died. And so I started crying. And so I said, oh my God, I can make myself cry remembering bad things. Didn't know that was, Stanislavski method. I had no idea in second grade. So what do? I go to my class. We used to go to see the ducks at the pond every Friday, quite boring. And so that Friday we went and I started remembering Lassie and I started crying. And Miss White, I remember, she was like, what's the matter? And, with Stanislavski being that I'm young, I didn't think it through. And so I said, my God, my brother died in the pond. Well, mind you, I have no brothers. I have one sister. And so they went back, to the classes. They gave me candy, everything. It was incredible. But when I came home, I was so convincing that Miss White had called my mom. And my mom, she was like, I'm so sorry that I took her out to the pond. She was like, what's wrong with the pond? She was like, I'm sorry about your son. My mom was like, what son? Your son that died in the pond. Well, needless to say, I got the whipping of my life. But my mom and dad realized that there's something there. If she can convince a teacher and kids, an objective she had to get candy and to leave the pool, the pond area. And so we thought either I was going to be a pathological liar or an actor. So they started putting me in classes. And that's how it started.
Well, it's interesting you use that term because Shonda Rhimes, straight out of, my homegirl from Chicago who's been producing TV,
she talks about
being a great liar. And I think that sort of plays
into it. We're great liars.
But I would have hated dating you, believe me, if you just start crying and like,
oh my God, I was so good at it. I was so good at it. And so that's what I knew then, that was my passion. That was my desire.
So what was your first acting job? I mean, not that you were paid for, but second grade is when you discovered it. What role did you have? Did you do something in school or further down?
I did a lot, but it was one place that I did that because I'm from East Hampton, and it was Guys and Dolls. I mean, no, Hello Dolly.
Good.
And they
show.
Couldn't. Yeah, it was good, and I was Dolly, but they couldn't really find a African American to play opposite me. And so what they did was they had a couple of people, but they
hold up. Where the heck were you living? You couldn't find. First of all, let's back up. You talked about ducks. What school had ducks with? And then you said,
I'm from East Hampton, Long Island. I'm from Hampton.
When people hear this, they got to understand not Hampton University in Virginia.
No,
because when you said ducks pond, couldn't find a black. You couldn't find a custodian. Nobody could play the opposite of you. What world were you?
But the thing is, we did find someone. Finally found someone, and it was great. But the thing is, just having to find it. I mean, I had to. There was no option for me. My parents always taught me to be the best. And we're kings and queens, and so. I never, it never riled me. I was like, do what you have to do because I'm going to be Dolly regardless. Find someone. And so they did. And so that was my first, you know, big, you know, thing for high school that I did. But there's a lot of little ones. I was in Rumpelstiltskin and, you know, cute stuff like that, where I wasn't a tree, but I was something like that. I was an object. So I was wonderful. I was so happy about being an object.
Where did that confidence come from? You said, you know, this place typically Europeans, and you said, I don't care. I'm going to get where did that confidence come from?
My mom and dad. I mean, they've always taught me since I was little that we were African Americans, were special, you know, and that we've come from a long line of kings and queens and a long line of inventors, you know, and when you have that instilled in you, you can go anywhere. It doesn't matter. And I think what I find interesting is the white people, they, when they know, you know, life's easier.
Yes.
Yeah. When you know, and you don't have to say a word, you can just, I walk into a room, you know, and they know, she knows who she is. And so I don't have to be calling her names. So it doesn't bother me. I know who I am. God's child first. And then I come from kings and queens. I mean, we're some bad people. We're amazing.
We are some bad folks. That's interesting. You would say
yes,
that.
We are.
I was just in Chicago at one of my favorite stores. And there was a shirt. I love to go in and buy t-shirts for my children and for myself. Mm-hmm. And there was a t-shirt that says, melanin has superpowers, and you just solidified that saying you, I mean, being a dark complexion, we're going to talk about that, what that means growing up in East Hampton, your parents provided you with some serious confidence.
I have
a dark daughter, my daughter Hadiah, my oldest, and I remember having to have that conversation with her about her complexion, her skin color. She loves NDIRE. She's a performer. NDIRE, you know, her music really soothed her as a young, she's 16 now, but I think your parents did an amazing job of doing that. So you come from a theater background.
I do. My great grandfather was in the Chitlin Circuit back when it was called the Chitlin Circuit, and it would go from churches to churches. He was heavily involved. And so I found out that's where I got, it jumped to me.
Wow. You didn't have to eat any chitlins for that role, though, you?
I'm not into that chitlin thing.
but so it is, as Kendrick Lamar said, it's in your DNA. So you got it from your grandfather.
It's in my DNA.
So then how did you transition from theater background to taking on a role like A Different World? You know, walk us through the process of auditioning or getting the call to audition for the role of Kimberly Reese, because you come from a theater background. Mm-hmm. And I know Denzel Washington always talks about how it was hard going from theater, live theater to TV.
Definitely.
What was that like?
Definitely. Well, actually, you know, I'm like Forrest Gump. I don't know any better. And so I just jump in. And so I was doing Serafina, and we were on our way to South Africa to tour, which was my dream. Because I'm a theater baby. I just love theater. I thought that I would end up on Broadway forever and live in New York. You know, and so when I got Serafina and we were going on a tour, we were like, oh my God, this is great. And then all of a sudden, you know, this came up, you know, from my managers, by the way, told me my skin color wasn't in. And I told them to call me back when it was. Mm. And so 2 weeks later, they called me back and told me your skin color's in.
Now, I want you to explain that to some people that don't understand what that means, that your skin color's
the entertainment sect was, they wanted somebody closer toward white. So they dealt with a lot of light skinned women. And men, not a problem. That's your preference. Didn't bother me, you know, because I knew my time would come. You know, and so, I mean, we dealt, if you notice, it was a lot of, you know, light-skinned people on television. And so my white little managers were honest with me, which I loved. They were like, well, they're not looking for any dark-skinned, you know, melanin women right now. So I said, fine, thank you. And I told them, call me back, you know, when, you know, it comes around again. And they were very surprised that I wasn't insulted, you know, because I'm God's child. I mean, he told me what's going to happen is just going to happen. And so I don't waver. And so 2 weeks later, you know, I got a call to do A Different World. And at that time, I wanted to go to South Africa. I mean, that is my dream, to go to South Africa to, you know, to soak up the culture and, you know, where I'm from, find out, you know, my relatives. It was just a wonderful thing I wanted to do. And so I went into the audition and I really didn't care. You know, and I tell my students that, you know, you don't go in desperate, because I didn't go in desperate, because I was like, I'm going to South Africa in like a couple of weeks. So who cares? And so I went in for the audition. I didn't pay any mind. They said, you got to call back. I still didn't pay any money. Then they said, we're flying you to L.A. Then I started paying some attention to it. I was like, oh, my God, yeah. I'm actually going to L.A., you know, for this screen test. And so when I was in L.A. and I was there, you know, you see all these suits and everything. It was something different for me. And, you know, and I was doing Kim role. And each time I would hear this white guy laugh. And each time I got pissed. I was like, let me do my role. Why are you laughing? It's not funny. And so each time I was doing that, I was getting angrier and angrier. Come to find out it was Brandon Tartikoff. And he's the one that picked me for Kim.
So when you did the audition, were you still on the road in South Africa? Were you sitting in?
No, I didn't go. I didn't go. We were still on Broadway. So right from Broadway, I left to move to L.A. I never went. It was either go to South Africa or go to L.A. And I decided to go to L.A.
So what was it about A Different World? Why did you want to be involved in this particular production? Was it something unique about
No,
this?
To be honest, we're gypsies. We're all actors. I knew nothing about, you know, I mean, I watched the Cosby Show. Matter of fact, I was an extra on it and I loved it. You know, and when this came about, I didn't think anything of it because we're theater babies. And so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't relevant. It was a gig. So we had no idea, you know, that this would change people's lives and you know, have them to think about going to college. And thank God we didn't know that because we didn't have social media back then. We probably would have failed. You know, we would have, you know, would have been so, you know, pressured into making things right that we didn't know. So we were just doing our job. We were just having fun and, you know, creating this fictitious college.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that that's a great way of looking at it because when people make history, many of them, their goal is not to make history.
Not to.
Their goal is just to do. And I think that we become somewhat full of ourselves when we do say our goal is to increase the number of African Americans to go to college, which happened. Our goal is to increase the number of Black viewers on TV, which happened. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to increase the number of diverse group of people, the images and the backgrounds they look at. Mm-hmm. And it all happened. But it happened because it was supposed to happen. It happened because it was supposed to happen. So let's talk about the character Kimberly Reese. Is there anything about Kimberly Reese that is Charnell Brown?
Yeah. I pulled from me. I am quite anal. So I can, you know, the parallel between me and Kim. But unlike Kim, you know, she's had a couple of mishaps on the show. You know, I am fickle. You know, I'm clumsy. You know, I'm all those things. I'm quirky. You know, I'm just not Kim. Kim was very defined. You know, she had a goal and, you know, she had to, you know, my backstory, because you always have to have a backstory, and I created it. You know, my brother was really wonderful, and I had to prove to my parents, being a female, you know, that was wonderful too. So it was pressure on her. And so she was always, you know, in a situation, her objective was to, you know, to make it out of there and do great, you know, and do great. And that was her focus. With me, no.
It's not
you. I'm far from that.
Was there anything that you disliked about the character at all?
Yes, I did. I thought she was quite boring.
Did you?
I thought, I was like, my God, will she ever smile? I mean, she's always working and she's always the voice of reason. And I'm like, and I didn't like it, you know, until later on, you know, and people were saying, well, you know, I can relate to Kim. I was like, really? You can relate to her? They're like, yeah, because she was average. Mm-hmm. You know, she was this woman that was going through college, you know, and trying to make it right in this very intelligent way, you know, trying to make it right and, you know, and to see the good in everyone. You know, and Kim did that. You know, she saw the good in everyone. I mean, she didn't take any mess, but she did see the good in everyone.
Or anything that you love?
Especially
that
Whitley.
Yeah, just, I know, Heather Whitley. What did you love? What did you love about her? Anything that you loved about her character?
That's what I loved about her, that she saw good in everybody. Everybody was innocent before proven guilty. And that's very rare these days. You know, and I think that Kim was that. You know, and Kim, you know, when she's a friend, she's very loyal. Very loyal friend.
She was definitely loyal, especially, you know, to a character playing opposite of Whitley. Now, you didn't attend an HBCU, correct?
I did not.
So, so how did that feel being on quote unquote a fictional HBCU campus and you did not attend an HBCU? Was that awkward for you?
No, because once again, I mean, I'm into my blackness. I'm into, you know, loving on each other. I'm into, somebody told me one time, you're in a bubble. And it goes, so when I knew when I grew up, when I, went to college, I was like, I thought everybody was like me. I thought everybody, was, into who they were and knew who they were. So that was a rude awakening. But on the set, no, because it was just, it was fun to relive something that I never did.
Yeah, that
was kind of fun.
Man, that was my, let me just tell you, if there's a time in my life that I can repeat all over again, but it has to have the same people, but I need to have a different mindset. Like I was, I'm about to call you Kim. You know that, like I'm about to say Kim.
That's okay.
I hung out with the cast that was getting smoking weed. I hung out with the cast that were very conscious. I hung out with the jocks. I hung out with the cute girls. I hung out with the girls who was sleeping with everybody. I hung out with the thugs. I was sort of this well balanced character growing up on the South Side of Chicago. Went to a predominantly white school. And HBCU was where I wanted to go when I discovered Grambling State University. I really wanted to go to Morehouse, but I looked at my I looked at my mother's bank account and I looked at my grades and there wasn't no happiness. So the closest thing I could get, not saying that Grambling was like a second, whatever.
No, but this is great too.
But in our family, we promote HBCUs. My wife went to Bowie State. My 16-year-old daughter, Howard, is at the top. Spelman is second. North Carolina A&T and FAMU. And so they were babies growing up on these college campuses.
Wonderful.
To see this show to really, really help me deal with some. I mean, you guys dealt with a whole lot of issues. I remember, I'll never forget one of my favorite by far. And we're gonna talk about one of your clips, but one of my favorite episodes, and it's still, when I'm about to mention it, it sort of brings chills to my body. It was the scene when Whitley and Dwayne Wayne when Whitley was about to get married and Dwayne checked in, and I'll never forget that scene. He says, "Baby, no." And man, I remember being in the house. I remember being in the house with like some of my girls from school, and I jumped in like I was like one of the girls. Like I'm screaming like, losing it. Like, go for it, Dwayne, go for it.
That's one of my favorites too.
Oh man, that
it's just pure love.
And that's what it was, because you think about being in college and you think about when you swore that you were in love or when you finished school and Whitley was born. Is there a favorite? Did you have a favorite scene?
I don't have a favorite scene, but I have a favorite moment when I met, she's going to kill me. She's Lena Horne.
Oh, yes, Lena.
When she came on the set, I was in awe. And I got a chance to sit down and talk with her, and she encouraged me, and it was just so beautiful. And she told me to keep doing what I'm doing and keep the contact, because she saw, that I knew who I was, And so it was a beautiful moment that I had with her, but that was the best. I will never, ever, ever, ever forget that.
And you guys had so many people, who are some of the people that came on the show that you were just like, I can't believe. This little brown girl from East Hampton. So Lena Horne.
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg, Diane Carroll, my dad played Shaft.
Yes.
And then we had Superfly, who played Whitley's dad. Then we had Robert Guillaume. Well, that was incredible. I mean, we had some incredible people. I can't even name them. They came through so quick. I mean, Tupac, Criss Cross. I mean, Tisha Campbell.
So, since we're talking about favorite scenes, I'm going to play one of my favorite clips from the show, and I want to get your response to it. So, here we go.
Right. Okay.
Oh, I wish I were in the land of cotton. Old time there and I've begotten. Look away, look away, look away, Gucci Land. Oh, I wish I were in Dixie. Away, away, in Dixie.
So that's one of my favorite scenes from A Different World that really showed your theater background. It showed your voice, how powerful your voice was. I know you did another scene when you were this diva. That's a whole nother conversation. When you talk about that Mammy scene and what that actually meant to you, and whose idea was that?
Okay, I think it was the writer's idea, and I think it was Debbie's idea to do something different. Let me tell you something about very interesting about that Mammy show. Actually, when we were in the, we were reading it, a table read, and everybody was very upset, you know, about, you know, why do we have, you know, Chernow, that's not cool. And I didn't understand why they were upset, because I don't know that. I don't know, you know, I didn't know it. You know, I don't know the hurt and the pain of being dark-skinned. I don't know that. I mean, I've never felt it before in my life. And so I didn't understand. And then I talked to Jasmine about it, and I told her, I said, I didn't have any problems like this. I mean, I, you know, that wasn't really in my growing up. And so, but she told me that, you know, her growing up, that she suffered being light-skinned. That the dark-skinned women would, you know, not torture her, but really, you know, say nasty things and terrible things about her. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, what? And so, you know, it's coming from both ways. And that's that good old Willie Lynch letter, you know, that is still happening today. And so what I did was I used her pain of what she went through. Because I've never gone through any, you know, anybody saying, you know, you're black. Yeah, I mean, and somebody said, you're black. Thank you. You're dark. Thank you. Because out of dark comes light.
Yes.
Without us, you can't be where you are.
So in that scene, when it ends, when Whitley comes to you and she says, how and why, Kim, and you said, because of you, that was real.
That was real. It's real because of you.
Wow.
Yeah. She shared her experience because, you know, I mean, as with acting, you have to pull from somewhere. Acting is real. You have to pull. And I didn't want to make it up because I never had to deal with that. And I'm sure it was where I lived, but I did not pay attention to it because it wasn't. The bottom line is, my dad always told me, don't let anybody take your power that God gave you.
Yes.
And in order for someone not to take your power, don't entertain it. And people always say, when you go into the room, you don't look at anybody. Why should I? I'm not there for them. Good for me.
Girl, you are inspiring some listeners right now. So you mentioned somebody who I was in love with. Her name is Debbie Allen. She's a Howard University grad, and her beautiful sister Felicia Rashad. What was it like working with Debbie Allen, and what's the best advice she's ever given you?
She was very hard. She was very straight. Oh, yeah. And that's why, because of Debbie Allen, is why I'm teaching today. Because I thought I would never teach kids, you know, or adults. I'm like, what do I know? I'm just surviving. But the teachings of her, what I've learned from her, you know, one thing I've learned from her is that, you know, you have to make sure that you know that you know that you know that you're good. So when you do a scene or you do something, don't let the hype get to you. Someone say, oh, you're wonderful, you're wonderful. If you don't feel you're wonderful, you're not wonderful. Just thank you and move on. Because people believe in the hype. Maybe I was good. No, you're not. So you have to know that you're good. You have to go in knowing, you know, do your homework, know that you're good. And then in self, that's how you stay grounded. Because if people keep telling you, you're wonderful, you're wonderful, you're wonderful, you don't search, be better. And so you'll stay right where you are, and it's all falsehood. Wow. That's what I've learned from her.
I love Debbie Allen. I could see how stern she was. I watched an episode where she talked about why Denise wound up leaving the show. Mm-hmm. Of course, the whole situation with Lenny Kravitz, and now they have Zoe.
Oh, yeah.
And how Mr. Cosby at the time, Bill Cosby, was like, yo, you know, she's pregnant. Denise is not pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so we pulled her off the show. So, of course, Mr. Cosby played a big role in this creation of this show and the Cosby Show. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've been asked thousands and thousands of times, what are some of your reactions to what's happening to a mentor that was a mentor to many of you guys with Mr. Cosby?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's still a mentor. Love him. It's unfortunate. I think there's no win on both ends of it. You know, but what I won't do is I will not negate the fact that that man has done a lot for us.
Yes.
Whether he has to deal with his demons You know, I'm not going to stop loving him, and I'm not going to stop respecting him for his work. What he does behind closed doors is his business. He just got caught.
And I love your approach you said us, because I felt like I was included in that us. When you said us, I didn't think you were talking about the cast. I felt the image of this, because I know watching the Cosby Show, being a researcher, I mean, what brother has Dr. Alvin Poussin, a psychologist on staff, to go in to pick the images? So I feel like you, that I'm not going to demonize this guy. And
and
you can have your opinions, but I love how you approached it. You said, I learned a lot. You know, he's done a lot, not only just giving back, but what he does, I'm not supporting that. But what he's done for people of color, and not just people of color, you know, folks
everywhere,
employed individuals. You know, of course,
and you know, so dangerous too. About people have to understand that he is a man. He's, I mean, he is not Dr. Huxtable. That's a character that he portrayed, and so people took it on as if he was that. He's not that. He's a good actor. That's what he did. So you have to separate the two. You know, and I think the people don't know how to separate. Oh my God! You know, the dad of—he's not your dad. Yeah. That was a show that he did. You know, and I have to say this too, that all these people, especially the black colleges, I'm very disappointed, because you took his name down, you took all the stuff down. Well, give back his money.
Yeah, let me tell you, if you denounce him, those schools aren't giving that money back.
Yeah, but you took him down. Give back his money.
You're right about that. So we hope the best for both parties, the females that were involved, Mr. Cosby, and also everybody else.
Exactly. Everybody else that's involved.
And so
I feel for those women. I feel for his wife. I feel for everybody. It's just a no-win situation. And I hope those ladies heal.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
So what has the reunions been like? You know, meeting Ron, back up with Ron and Whitley and Dwayne.
Well, we talk anyway, so. It's not like we don't, you know, I talk to Jazz all the time. That's my lady. We call her Princess.
Yeah. Man, you know, folks be in love with Jasmine Guy, boy. But you know, let me tell you, I loved you because you were just a beautiful sister. I mean, that skin glowing. But let me tell you who I really had a crush on, because she was so quirky. Man, Freddie, I just love Freddie.
I had a crush on Freddie. That character was the most adorable character in the world.
I think she was. I mean, and it's interesting because Freddie's character is like what you're seeing now. Like when I look at my daughter as an artist, when I look at other I mean, you're seeing Freddie's all over the place. And
all
she
over
was
the
this
place.
Perky character, but she was very quirky, conscious. Funny. See, because that's how I grew up, very conscious. She was concerned about women. She was concerned about animals.
Everything.
She was concerned about foods.
Concerned about the world.
The world. And it's funny because you have those people. When people say that HBCUs are not diverse, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Because you look at everybody on that cast. You look at you who struggled because you said your brother and you had to do this. You look at Freddie who come from this world. Mm-hmm. You look at Whitley who was privileged. You know, you look at like Dwayne Wayne that was sort of like blue collar.
Blue collar.
You look at Ron who was like the ladies man. But then also I love the scene with Ron when they dealt with the issue around race and racism with the white guys.
That was good.
And
that
so
good.
You dealt with so many. And then you got the young crew coming in. Jada, who's from Baltimore, talking about Tupac. Mm-hmm. And so you talk about diversity. So when people say that there's no diversity on HBCs, I don't know what the heck they're talking about.
I don't know what they're talking about. And then also the people will talk because they want to talk. You know, that's what I tell people. I tell my kids, don't believe the hype. Don't believe anything anybody says. Do your research. I tell my kids, there's no reason for you to be dumb. You have a phone.
Oh, you are so
you can Google anything. You can Google anything you want. There's no reason for you not knowing.
So let's talk about what you are doing, since we're talking about research and I had to research homegirl. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Tri-Win Productions. First of all, let's start with the name, Tri-Win Productions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you try, you win.
Yes.
Always.
Mm-hmm. Always. Got to make an effort, right?
Always.
So what are some always things that you guys are doing with the Tri-Win Productions?
Well, right now, we're producing a play and August 4th, one night only in Beaumont, Texas, at the Julie Rogers Theater. And it's a play called Never Play With a Woman's Heart. And it's a friend of mine, Dennis S. Hubbard. He's out of Newport News, Virginia. And he's a playwright and he's an author. And he's bringing this play down. And he was kind enough to allow some of my students to be in it as well because I teach classes. and my actors are divas. They're amazing. And so we're doing that, and I have an acting school down here that I teach children and scene study and everything down here. 80% of my actors are working, which is a blessing. And also, too, it's so many things are going on. Actually, we're working on getting financing for a film that I penned called The Coffee Pot, which was called Coffee Clash, but nobody understood what that meant, so we changed it.
So explain why you changed the title. I know we talked about it off air. Why did you
change it? Yeah, we talked about it. Actually, we did a research in Atlanta, New York, and here, and to see what they would go see. And so, like, two people from here, you know, would go see Coffee Clash. And the other one said Coffee Pot. And I said, why not Coffee Clash? They said, because we don't know what that is. You know, and they don't want to, you know, appear dumb to have to look up a title. If you have to look up a title, they got to go see something else. Coffee Pot, they like Coffee Pot. I said, why? They said, because coffee, they can relate to coffee. Yeah. I said, And then I thought, like I was telling you, the color purple has nothing to do with the issue of the story. It was just color purple flowers. Mm. It works. And so we turned it into the Coffee Pot. Also, too, I'm on KCOH radio. I have a segment called Defining Your Journey with my life coach, Jean-Renee Simon-Vaughn. And we're on there on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock. And then we're in a process with the mayor to get a theater on the north side of Houston, which we don't have, in one of our incredible historical areas called Acres Home. And so we're working on that as well.
I love Houston. I mean, it's a huge city. That traffic is insane.
Love Houston.
So
yeah, I love Houston.
So congratulations on all the things that you're doing. So what do you do when you're not doing theater?
I take care of my mommy. My mom has Alzheimer's.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, so I have 4 hours during the day with a caretaker to get all my stuff in. And after that, my mom is my priority. And what I love about it is I've had my mom now for 10 years. And, 11 years. And that's why people don't understand why they thought I dropped out or, you know, I didn't think that I could plug it. No, she was my priority. I had to take care of my mom first. And what our God did, is that when I was taking care of her, he allowed me to still stay in the business as far as teaching. And so now I have my own business teaching. And so eventually he'll allow me to get back on camera and on film and stuff like that. But that was my priority.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your mom. It's interesting because Dougie, I was with Dougie Fresh a while ago, and he talked about his mom having Alzheimer's. And I'm glad that you're able to act and take care of your mom. It's interesting, when I posted on Facebook that I was going to be interviewing you, of course, people said, I said, what questions would you ask her? And they said, well, where have you been? It's interesting when people don't follow. Like, Bill Duke is one of my mentors, who I love. Bill Duke.
I love Bill Duke.
I sat down with him, and he loves me because I said something funny about, you know, his famous line from Menace to Society. And you know, famous line where he said, you know, you fucked up. You know, you real fucked up. That's like his famous line. And he says, out of all the things I've done, why is that the only thing that people remember about me? But he went on to say that, why do people think I'm not working? Because they're not seeing me. And he says that he's learning to be behind the camera more so than being in front of the camera. And so I love that you're taking care of mom, that you're still taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
Since you're taking care of mom, we're going to take you back to being a young person growing up in East Hampton. If you could tell your young acting self anything, what would it be?
You know something? I have no regrets. Keep on doing what you're doing. None. I wouldn't change a thing.
I love no regrets. I love. So how do you want the world to be different because Charnel, you know, I want to keep calling you Kim, right? How do you want the world to be different because you lived in it?
You know, so the bottom line is, I mean, it's a couple of things, two things. You know, as African-Americans, we're not going to progress and we're not going to get respect. And the police are not going to stop killing us until we love each other. Until we come together as a whole. We're the only race that does not support one another. Just think about that. We're the only ones that don't support one another. We're so scattered. We're all over the place. We're looking for the American dream that, you know, the white people have, you know, told us that you have to aspire to be. And we're forgetting about loving each other. You know, our households are broken. You know, our guys are not, you know, following through, and our women are not, you know, following through what they need to do if they have children. you know, it's all this stuff is crazy because, you know, I always say, you know, Black Lives Matter. It does matter, but we have to make sure the Black Lives Matter within ourselves. Wow. If we don't feel like it matters, they're going to keep doing what they're doing because they're realizing that they're not, we're not together and they know we're not. So they're going to keep doing what they're doing. They're going to keep doing it until we respect ourselves as a race. Everything is going to continue to keep doing what it's doing.
Well said. What are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for life. I'm grateful for my mom being here. You know, I'm just grateful. I'm just grateful for being alive because I always say that, you know, when you get up in the morning, you have a 50-50 chance to get it right. Some people didn't wake up this morning. So people ask me, how are you doing? I'm alive. That's enough said. Whether I have a bad day or a good day, at least I have a bad day, I can speak about it. 6 feet under, you can't speak about it. Mm-hmm. It's just as simple as that. Yeah. You know, thank you. I'm alive, you know, to carry out my purpose, desire.
So what is the most difficult decision you've had to make to pursue your destiny?
I would think, you know, it's lonely. You have to, everybody can't come with you. So, you know, so there's seasons that people are in your lives and you just hope to God that somebody's in your life for the rest of your life, but there's seasons and you know, and I always tell people, you can tell when you're starting to get to your next level, it's like an onion, things are being peeled and it hurts, you know, that layer hurts, it hurts because you want that person to be with you. It gets lonely, you know, when you get to where you have to be. Where your desire is, where God wants you.
It's interesting you would say that. Erica Badu, shout out to E. Badu, another HBCU.
Hey, Erica.
Oklahoma State University, lives in Texas, mm-hmm. from Dallas. Mm-hmm. There's a song where she talks, in the intro, she talks about, you know, I'm human, but I, you know, mm-hmm. when I'm on the road, I miss my mama, I want my mama. You know, she talks about being alone. And
alone.
I don't think that we have those opportunities to really dive into those questions enough. And that's why I created Sound Balm. You know, a balm is like a healing, B-A-L-M. There's a balm in Gilead. Mm-hmm. And this show is really about healing. You know, of course, bringing you on, talking about the show, you know, that's cool. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people really want to know, you know, at the heart of where you are. And that's why I'm asking these final questions. I call these the Sound Bombing Super Question because it has nothing to do about acting, but it has a lot to do about humanity. And, you know, asking you know, what you're grateful for and those things. So I have a couple of other sound bombing super questions. What's your favorite word?
Victory.
Victory. Okay. What is the book you've given most as a gift and why?
Wow. I've given out a lot of books. You know, something I've given out, what is it?
The Celestine Prophecy?
Yes, that's it.
See, you didn't know I was that sharp. I got you trying to check.
No, I knew. I was hoping. I was like, please help me.
It's a green book, The Celestine Prophecy.
A green book? Yeah, that's a green book. Yeah.
On the same page. All right. When you feel overwhelmed or unfocused or have lost your focus temporarily, what do you typically do?
I get on my knees and I pray.
What sound or noise do you love?
Birds singing.
What's your superpower?
My superpower, love.
Wow. Superpower is love. So love. What's next for Charnell Brown?
Wow. You know something? I'm just right now so weird because I used to be in the driver's seat and God was in the, you know, in the other seat. Now we're switched because I've hit my head enough. I'm just going where he tells me to go. I mean, you know, the things are happening. I know that my school is growing, which is amazing. And, you know, being on the radio, which I thought I would never be, you know, doing that. And so he's opening up doors, you know, that I thought I could never, ever, ever. I mean, writing, you know, and getting a film out there. And it's just amazing. I mean, the possibilities are endless now. And so right now we're just focusing on that one show hopefully we'll tour it. And then I have, toured other shows. I've been writing, I've been directing, I've been producing. Who knew? And I like that better than acting because I give people an opportunity to work. Me acting, I can't give any opportunity to anybody but myself. Yeah. So, Yeah.
So yeah. How can people get in contact with Miss Brown?
Yes, they can. Actually, it's at Triwind Productions, 22@Yahoo. That's TRIWEN Productions with an S, 22@Yahoo.com.
Well, let me just say, Sister Brown, a.k.a. Kimberly, dreams do come true. Who would have ever thought little brown boy from the south side of Chicago sitting on the couch listening to that theme music, waiting to see you dance across the screen, that chocolate girl from East Hampton, that I would then get an opportunity to sit down. I just want to just thank you. I pray that God gives you everything that you deserve.
Shout out to Mark Williams.
Because you know Mark will get on me. Man, why did you say my name? We cannot thank my man, Dr. Mark Williams.
Right. Dr. Mark Williams.
For making the introduction. He's wonderful. Everything he said about you is right and exact. He said, D, you and Charnel are going to make an immediate connection. And when I called you and I told you I used to teach at that old crazy Yates High School.
At Yale.
And you were like, yeah, that's a connection. We ain't going to say that was bad about that place.
I think we both
got our start there with the teaching piece. But exactly. That was a great connection. So I just want to just thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for coming to Sound Bombing and sharing your beautiful story. We pray for your mom. I know my had family members with Alzheimer's. They're very interesting. Yeah. If they're not sick, they're very funny. The things that you hear from them, I love research on them. You never know what comes out of their mouth. Man, you don't
because
know.
My mom's a minister, and I'm getting all this stuff before she was a minister, so you know I'm having a call.
You know, that's interesting. Yeah, okay. Before mama got saved, huh? That's what's coming out. So you enjoy that time as much as you can. I'm going to suggest to you that you record as much as you can those memories with your mother, because I mean you cannot get that back. So thank you for coming on to the show, and I want to thank my producer Darius Wilmore and Supremacy for our music.
Yes, they're the best.
And
as always,
believe that something wonderful is about to happen, and that some people miss the message because they are too busy looking for the mistake. Thanks for tuning in, and do something for someone other than yourself. This is your man, Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields. From Sound Bombing Studios and my girl Charnel Brown. You know her as Kimberly on A Different World. Support her. Yes. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Peace.